Hi, it's me, but I'm not Patsy. I'm Bria, guest hosting for Joy on Paper, and it is an absolute honor to be here in the studio. We just had a fantastic interview with author Lewis Knight, and now we are going to be talking to another fabulous science fiction author. And first, I want to introduce you to her book, The 11th Gate, by Nancy Kress. Big Ed, do we have that science fiction book buzz ready? Okay.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2021 release in audiobook, The 11th Gate by Nancy Kress, a multiple Nebula and Hugo Award-winning author. Blackstone Audio produced this audiobook with stellar narration by Braden Wright. The novel is also available in print and ebook. Now, let's download the book buzz. When an explosion near a newly discovered stargate kills citizens of Paragoy Corporation, the first interstellar war breaks out between the corporation and the Landry Libertarian Alliance. The person responsible confesses to Rachel Landry, the head of the alliance, explaining it was an accident. With the fate of the eight worlds at stake, Rachel partners with Philip Anderson, a citizen of the neutral world Polyglot. Philip, a philosopher, undergoes a risky procedure to expand the functions of his brain in hopes of connecting with the quantum realm in order to discover the secrets of the stargates. Meanwhile, the military commander of Paragoy Corporation, Luis Martinez, battles amongst the stars against a warmongering granddaughter of Rachel Landry, despite Rachel's protest to end the fighting. Luis captures another granddaughter of Rachel's, and their initial hatred of each other morphs into something else as the truth about the war, the stargates, and the nature of reality itself emerges. The high-speed political sci-fi thriller offers an equal mix of high-octane interstellar battle, mind-stretching scientific and philosophical musings about the nature of the universe, and thorough character studies of flawed protagonists seeking their version of utopia. Author Nancy Kress has written 33 books, and her work has won 6 Nebulas, 2 Hugos, a Sturgeon, and the John W. Campbell Memorial Award. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off.
Okay, so do we have Nancy on the line? Nancy, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Hello, Bria.
Hi, I am so thrilled to talk to you. And right now I have a camera on me and I'm holding up your book, The 11th Gate, so that the viewers on YouTube and Facebook can see this fabulous book. So first of all, can you tell us a little bit about yourself as a writer and what you're currently writing?
Well, I've been a science fiction writer for over 40 years, and I really don't know why. I know that sounds very strange, but when I started to write, it came out science fiction. I had always read science fiction, but I'd always read everything. So I really don't know. A lot of my career just sort of happened. I would do this book, and then I would think, oh, that's a good idea. I'll do this other book. But none of it was actually very well planned.
So would you describe yourself more as a pantser versus a plotter as a writer?
Yes, but I've gotten to be more of a plotter as I got older. Pantsing works really well for short stories, but for novels, it has to all hang together. And after killing a certain number of novels because they never came all together, I realized that novels need to be a lot more plotted.
That makes sense. So for the listeners who are maybe new writers wondering what we're talking about, when we talk about outlining or preparing a novel ahead of time, that is that you make a plan for what's going to happen in the novel. You have often things like character sheets of who the characters are, and all that is potentially planned before the book is even written. And pantsing is the idea of flying by the seat of your pants and just kind of going with what the muse delivers as you write. So I relate to what you're sharing because I, as a writer, I love the pantsing, that sensation that you're just kind of going with the story that, in my case, I say that God is giving me at that moment. And then other times I write myself right into a corner. So as you started this journey through science fiction writing, not intending to start there, but what drew you to continue writing science fiction?
It's big enough. You get entire galaxies if you want them. Or you get entire realms of consciousness. Or if you're writing fantasy, you get entire magic systems that you can invent. And although I love mainstream, and in fact my very favorite author is Jane Austen, but nonetheless, it's science fiction is big enough to do the kind of thought experiments that interest me. Because this is what SF is good at. Thought experiments in inventive societies to explore real-world situations. And when I wrote 11th Gate, there were a couple of different things I wanted to explore, two particularly. I wanted to explore how a new piece of technology, in this case the 11th Gate, which nobody understands when they stumble across it, gets used in different ways by interested groups and different people, different individuals, which is true of any piece of technology. From fire onward, the day we discovered fire, the crime of arson became possible. Any piece of technology gets its own uses by different groups. I wanted to explore that. And the other thing I wanted to explore is various political and economic systems. This is a space opera, but it's about a lot more than just battles, or at least I hope it is, as your introduction indicated. And thank you for that lovely introduction, incidentally.
I absolutely love the book, so it was a pleasure to read and to do that review because, yeah, what you're describing now is exactly, I felt so immersed in this space opera, but there is such a wonderful tightness to it where you are just right there with the characters, and so I want you to continue what you're saying because I had so much fun reading this book.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. The two empires that are more or less at war, accidentally, as you pointed out. One is libertarian, and the other is a benevolent dictatorship. The dictatorship, since this is the modern world, is corporate, not monarchical, not royalty. But it's the same thing, and it has the same weaknesses. Even with a benevolent dictatorship, where somebody, the dictator, is really concerned about the welfare of all of its citizens, two things have to happen. One, you have to keep a tight control on everybody to make sure that the dictatorship stays in place. And secondly, the big problem throughout history, you're going to die. The dictator will die. Mm. And then there are other people who will take over who may not have the same benevolence. I wanted to do the weaknesses and strengths of that system and the weaknesses and strengths of libertarianism, which is the Landry's, and see how they fare and clash. And I guess, Bria, there was a third thing I wanted to explore, too, through Philip Anderson. And that's the role of consciousness in the universe. There's a lot of science that says consciousness is in some way woven into the universe. The observer affects a lot of what we see at the quantum level, what we try to measure. And I wanted to include that, too.
And you've done it absolutely beautifully. It is a fast-paced, thought-provoking book that, as I sat there, I had to just, I enjoy meditating on the words sometimes of a good book, so I might go back and reread a paragraph just a couple times, not because I got stuck and didn't understand it, but I just want to soak in what that wonderful paragraph is saying, and I found myself doing that quite a lot with, specifically, you mentioned Philip Anderson. That character has a fascinating arc, and I won't give any spoilers because I want readers to be able to experience it for themselves, but what he goes through and becomes, my goodness, what a creative endeavor you've done with him, and you've made it accessible. I mean, you're talking about the quantum realm, so there is a lot of unknowns, but you did such a wonderful job of taking what is known and creating something that might be plausible, but who knows? Let's just see what happens, right?
We will. But while we're talking about the quantum realm and what might be plausible and the way consciousness is woven into the universe, you had asked me what my next book is, and it deals with those themes too. But this is different than something I've written before because it's my first book co-authored with somebody else. The book is Observer. The book is called Observer. It comes out January 10th, and it's co-written with Dr. Robert Lanza. Dr. Lanza is a prominent scientist, a geneticist. In in 2014, Time magazine named him one of the most 100 influential people in the world. This book doesn't deal with genetics. It doesn't deal with genetics, though. It deals with the way consciousness shapes the universe. And it's built on very solid science, starting with all the way back with the experiments, with the two-slit experiments, where it was determined that electrons can be both waves and particles. And it builds on that, and it builds on it and builds on it and builds on it, till it ends up, I think, in very surprising places. And it's different from the 11th gate in that it takes place on Earth in contemporary or very near future. It doesn't have a galactic empire. It doesn't have a war. It's a different kind of book. But Philip Anderson would probably fit just as well in that universe as he does in the 11th gate.
Ah, okay. How fascinating. You said the title of that book coming out in January. You said The Observer?
Observer. Just Observer.
Just Observer. Oh, I'm going to be looking for that book. Absolutely. And the co-authoring, can you just share a little bit about what has that experience been like to co-author a book? You're saying that's the first time you've done co-authoring?
Yes, it is. And it's, well, I did some short stories a long time ago, but this is the first novel. And it's been a really interesting experience. Dr. Lanza Bob has a theory worked out about consciousness in the universe. And the characters in the book and the actual prose are mine. The ideas behind it are Bob's. And the plot was worked out between the two of us through multiple iterations. So it's a real co-authoring effort. And I think the results are extremely interesting because they are underlaid by actual science. Again, the book is called Observer. Mm-hmm. It's available now for pre-order on Amazon if anybody is interested. It's much different than the 11th Gate, but it has some of the same themes.
Okay, wonderful. I will be putting my pre-order in as soon as we hang up today. So back to the 11th Gate. Am I correct that this is a standalone novel? It is not part of a series.
Right, it is. It is a standalone novel. I have committed trilogy three times, but each time it was accidental.
Oh.
I wrote the first one in...
I love the theme of accidental here. We're going to go with that.
Yeah, that's what my career has been. I wrote the first book and felt that it wasn't complete, and then I wrote the second book and felt that it wasn't complete. And then I did feel it was complete, and I do feel 11th Gate is complete. So I will not be writing a sequel to this one.
It very much completes beautifully. And sometimes, as much as I enjoy series, the occasional standalone can be so satisfying because it's almost like instead of binging a TV show, you're just watching a movie. And so when you just read a standalone novel like this, you know, okay, things are going to wrap up and there's going to be an ending and there won't be a cliffhanger leaving me waiting months and months for the next book. So that was one of the things I also enjoyed was when I picked up The 11th Gate, I knew it was a standalone. And much of science fiction is series. That's very popular. Tell me...
How did you happen to pick it up? How did you happen to pick this book up?
If I'm remembering correctly, I subscribe to BookBub, so I get the emails... I do get BookBub. I'm remembering incorrectly. It was Chirp, so audiobook. I actually first listened to this as an audiobook, and I believe it was on Chirp as a discounted audiobook, so I went ahead and picked it up and had an absolute blast listening to it, and the narrator was fantastic. I imagine you have listened to your narrator because he did a wonderful job.
Well, I'm glad to hear that because, no, I haven't. I never listened to my own audiobooks.
Really? Tell me why.
Well, it's not because I think they won't be done well. I'm sure that they are because people have told me they are. I would much rather read a book than listen to it.
Okay.
I don't track as well listening. And I read rapidly, and I track much better and remember much better when I read. So I read a lot of books, and I don't listen to any.
Okay, well, fair enough, and I will just be the one to tell you, your narrator is fantastic. I think with science fiction, to your point, though, there were words that I thought, I wonder how that's spelled, because I can imagine, because not all the words are familiar, because in a science fiction space opera like you've given us, there can be, you know, words like polyglot, this planet, and I'm thinking to myself, I can imagine what that word is, but it was nice to pick up. I went ahead and got the mass market paperback of The 11th Gate so that I could look at it and read it as a print book as well, to know how these words were, and if there was anything I missed, it was nice to be able to review. So I did enjoy also digging a little deeper once I had the book in hand. So that is an interesting point that you make, because when I listen to any science fiction, fantasy, any otherworldly of any kind, sometimes you don't quite know what the word is because it's a made-up word in the author's realm. So it does, I'm going to just say, what a great way to support these authors, get their audiobook and get their print book or ebook.
Well, of course I'm in favor of that.
Yes. So back to just a couple things about the, just, you mentioned it's not primarily a, let's say, military sci-fi. There's elements of that. But when you were writing some of these spacecraft and even the K-beam that is this advanced technological weapon, tell us a little bit about research. How did you come up with some of these things?
Some of them have been drifting around science fiction for, you know, anybody to use. The K-beam is a put-together of various physics things. I do read. I'm not trained as a scientist, but I enjoy reading science. And one of the best ways I have found to educate myself on basic physics is the books of Brian Greene. The Elegant Universe, The Fabric of the Cosmos, and there's a third one, too. And those have made a lot of physics clearer to me than they were by my college education somewhere back in the early Jurassic. So, and he has more of the updates on it, too. And one of the things that I liked about science fiction when I first discovered it, which I didn't do, incidentally, until I was age 14, and I'll tell you why in a minute, is that it does start, at least the best of it, in my opinion, with known science or known situations, and then takes a leap off the edge of speculating of what might happen.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the more plausible that is, the better I like it, which is one reason I do try to do the research behind these things. The reason I didn't discover science fiction until I was age 14 has to go back to the 1950s when I was a child, and the world was much different. The elementary school I attended in the library had a girls' section and a boys' section, and all the science fiction was shelved in the boys' section, and the girls didn't go over there. So
how
I didn't see
fascinating
any.
And a little
it was a different world. But when I was 14, I had my first boyfriend, and he was studying to be a concert pianist. So after school, I would go over to his house and hang over the piano while he practiced, you know, hang adoringly, as teenage girls do, or did. Well, I'm tone deaf. I could only hang adoringly for maybe 10 minutes. And then I would kind of edge away to the bookshelves in that room and pull books off at random. His father had a lot of books there. And I pulled down Arthur C. Clarke's Childhood's End. And within three pages, I was in love, and not with this concert pianist. I was in love with the whole idea of science fiction.
Oh, that is what a fantastic story. I just love that, the idea that you have a lot of accidental serendipitous moments here.
Yes.
In your story. It's a fantastic, and just what a journey it has led you on. Now, I've looked at your bio. You have won 6 Nebulas, 2 Hugos, a Sturgeon, and the John W. Campbell Memorial Award. Tell us a little bit, are those primarily for short stories, for novels?
Primarily for short stories. Probability Space won the, which is a novel, won the John W. Campbell Memorial Award. That's the Probability series is the hardest SF. I don't mean the most difficult. I mean the most scientifically rigorous SF that I've probably ever written. It's based on physics, and I did a lot of research and invention for that one.
Oh.
The only other time I've ever done more research is the second book in my Tomorrow's Kin series, I needed, as a main character, an Army Ranger. And I did huge amounts of research on reading memoirs from actual Rangers who served in Iraq, reading the Ranger Handbook, and I can now construct a field antenna should this ever become necessary. And then when I was done, I hired an actual Ranger to read it and correct any mistakes with weapons and things so I didn't make a total fool of myself, and he was also very helpful. But I do the research behind the books whenever I can.
Oh, that is fantastic. And to any writers who are listening, this is such fantastic advice, because there are resources just from people we may know. Now, for example, if someone were trying to write a crime fiction, there are probably police officers who would love to talk to them about how not to write, because they get tired probably of seeing things done the wrong way on TV. So I imagine,
yes, I
you
think
know,
that's
just
true.
Just to your point that you found an Army Ranger, I just love that to make sure that you were writing as realistic and plausible as you could. So tell us a little bit about, If a writer is wanting to find you, follow you, what are your websites, social media? How can writers get in touch with you if you have a contact or a newsletter?
I don't have a newsletter. I have a website. It's www.nancycress.com. Unfortunately, it's extremely out of date because I'm not good at this, but there is a contact button. So you can contact me and it will go to my email. I'm on Facebook. And I'm on Facebook with public posts, so I can also be contacted that way.
And I'm going to say it's okay that your gifting is not in the website and social media area, because your gifting is absolutely in the writing. I completely was just swallowed up in the best sense when I was entering your world in the 11th gate. And if an author or a writer were listening in who's maybe brand new to science fiction, do you have any final words of advice for them?
Yes, I do. I've been thinking about this because I teach a lot. I teach writing, SF writing specifically. And I think there are three qualities or four qualities that make a writer, and you can cultivate them. One is a basic level of talent, but you can really cultivate the talent you have. The second is persistence. You have to keep at this, sometimes for a very long time. But you have to keep doing it. Also, going along with persistence, the third one, you have to be open to feedback. If you don't have any professionals and there's no classes near you and you can't afford to travel to a workshop or something like that, at least get people who would like to read science fiction as your beta readers. They don't have to tell you how to fix a book, but they can tell you, for instance, my interest flagged here, or I didn't understand this, or the ending wasn't satisfying. Don't ignore this, especially if you can get more than one beta reader and they end up saying the same thing. Be willing to learn, in other words. I sometimes have a student whose basic attitude is to defend every last comma. Don't do that. Try to be open to learning. And the last thing, which you can't control, is luck. The right editor has to see the right story at the right moment. But if you persist long enough and the work is good, somebody will eventually show an interest in it.
Absolutely fantastic advice from Nancy Crest, a multi-award winning author, and it has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, Nancy.
Well, I've enjoyed this, Bria. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you. And for those who were just tuning in, make sure you visit nancycress.com. You can see her Facebook connection there and any contact. You can see her awards, and be sure to buy her books. They are absolutely wonderful. So thank you.
Thank you again.
Yes, thank you, Nancy.